Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome everyone to the From the Shadows podcast. I'm your host, Shane Grove. Flying solo tonight. Jason, the super producer, wasn't available to jump on. But before I get started here with tonight's guest, I just want to remind everybody that if you've got a story or a sighting or just something that you want to share with me off the air or even on the air, make sure you get a hold of us. From the Shadows podcast on Facebook or our forum page on Facebook called After the Shadows. You can send us a message on there. You can find me at Shane Grove Author on Instagram or hit us up on our From the Shadows podcast Instagram page. And the best way to go and leave us a detailed email is just to go to our website, fromtheshadowspodcast.com. Send me an email. I'll get it. Sometimes it goes to the judge, and he, he's hit or miss because he's an important guy. And if he was here, he'd be the second one to tell you he was an important guy. So forgive me if it goes to the judge and I don't get it till 3 weeks later, but I'll get back to you eventually. So I'm excited about tonight's guest. And some of our listeners may know him because he's a author of a couple really cool books about Bigfoot, and he has a really cool YouTube channel. So joining us tonight is David Wilbanks of the Bigfoot and More YouTube channel, and I'll let him tell about the books because I don't want to butcher the titles because I'm terrible at names. So David, thanks for joining us tonight on the From the Shadows podcast.
Hey, thanks for inviting me on.
Well, I'm glad we could kind of short notice. Glad we could kind of get this set up so we could get you on and hear about. I know I mentioned the YouTube channel, the Bigfoot and More. Do you want to tell our audience, our listeners, a little bit about that YouTube channel before we get into the books?
I can, and part of your sentence kind of broke off there.
Oh,
I would hear the very last part of it.
Sorry, I was just saying before we start talking about the books, do you want to tell everybody? Let's talk about your Bigfoot and More YouTube channel a little bit. Like, tell our listeners what that channel is and what they can expect to find when they go over and check it out.
Okay, well, like you were saying, the YouTube channel is called Bigfoot and More, and it's primarily Bigfoot stuff. I put the More on it because I do some, like, educational videos about venomous snakes and stuff like that. That's one of my other hobbies there. So you'll find a few videos on there that don't have anything to do with Bigfoot, so that's why I put the More on it, you know? So if somebody sends me a report of another type of cryptid, you know, I might make a video about that as well. But it's primarily, I do a lot of sharing other people's encounters that give me permission to do so. I do a lot of solo camping in the Kaimishi Mountains, and I try to document each one of those. I've done some trips up into the mountains where I take my son Elijah with me, and we've had a friend of ours from Massachusetts who has a YouTube channel called the No Such Thing podcast. He's came down a couple of times and went on a couple of those field trips with us as well. But I've had the YouTube channel up for a couple of years, right at 2 years, I think. And but that's primarily what you'll find there is Bigfoot related stuff. And I do a live podcast every Tuesday night that I call Tuesday night talk in which I interview different people, witnesses. This Tuesday night, I'm interviewing another Oklahoma author of Bigfoot-related fictional books named John Vandeventer, who has a couple of books called Relics, The Dark Autumn, and Relics 2, The Honubby Remnant, which I'm reading the second book and about through, and we're going to talk about that. Really good books there, too. So that's a little bit. But Bigfoot and More is the same, is the name of the YouTube channel.
Cool. I hope, hopefully everybody will go check it out and see what it is that, you know, I mean, if you're listening to us, I'm sure you're doing the same stuff. I mean, you're talking to people and you're talking about experiences. Now, I don't, I'm not sure I could go watch anything about venomous snakes. To me, that's scarier than going out looking for Bigfoot, talking about venomous snakes.
There's one about you. I mean, I think you've got water moccasins up there in Ohio, don't you? Like the venomous type?
Yeah.
Cottonmouth? Yep. Okay. Well, they are thick as flies down here in southeast Oklahoma. And one of the trips I was down there looking for evidence of Bigfoot, there was none. And so that night there was a hole of water in the creek below me. So I just kind of waded out there and did a little video about the cottonmouths. And there's a little video about that on there as well.
You
just got to remember on venomous snakes, you know, they're all right. Just this comes off an old movie. So you just got to stay away from the sharp end, you know.
I guess so.
I do not free handle venomous snakes. And personally,
you're not a Pentecostal
YouTube channel. No, but you know what? If there was one of those type of churches around here, I would go just to watch. You know, root for the snake. I think anybody that slings them around and acting like that deserves to get bit. You know,
root for the snake. Now that is a T-shirt.
But that, you know, a funny story there. You know, my place of business. I own a music store, and churches are a large part of my clientele, you know, for PA systems and such. And those snake handling churches, they're a kind of a strange kind of Pentecostal. And I told one of my Pentecostal preacher customers, keeps inviting me to church. I said, you know, you bring the snakes in there. I said, I'll come. and he said, no, I'm not going to do that.
You know? Oh gosh. That's just crazy. To me, that is probably worse than going out and by yourself looking for Bigfoot. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not worried about it. I've had no negative experiences involving a Sasquatch.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, let's talk about your latest book, because isn't that, I mean, that's about your experiences and about other people's experiences in and around Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, a matter of fact, and I did not realize this. Somebody, it's self-published. I published it, and it's called Kiamishi Bigfoot, Investigating the Oklahoma Sasquatch. And for anybody who don't know how to spell it, Kiamishi is spelled K-I-A-M-I-C-H-I. And when I first published it, and you'd type it in on Amazon, it would take you to recipes for kimchi, which is a Korean dish, you know, which is funny because, you know, my wife is from South Korea, you know, and I'm like, honey, Kiamishi doesn't sound like kimchi, you know, but yeah, it's available on Amazon in ebook or paperback, and it's by me, David Wilbanks, Kiamishi Bigfoot, Investigating the Oklahoma Sasquatch. And it's I do share some other people's sightings. There's a chapter on that, but most of it are sightings that I have personally investigated more in depth that some of the ones I find of most interest. And all of these are in Oklahoma. One of my friends, when it first was published, said, I think you've written the first book that exclusively focuses on Bigfoot sightings in Oklahoma. And I think he's right. But somebody last month published one that's revolves around an area of Oklahoma. But I may well be the first one to publish one that is exclusively about the Bigfoot mystery in Oklahoma.
Well, what makes the Kayamishi area so special then?
Well, okay.
You wrote a whole book about it. What makes it so special?
Well, okay, it's like this. The Kayamishi Mountains are a sub-range of the Ouachita Mountains, which are in the Ouachita National Forest, and that extends from southeast Oklahoma all the way into central Arkansas. And basically, I thought Kayamishi Bigfoot sounded cooler than Ouachita Bigfoot.
It does. I got to admit, it sounds pretty cool.
And it does. And that's part of the sub-range that I go down into. And I thought, well, do I want to call it Oklahoma Bigfoot? Nah. I just thought that Kayamishi Bigfoot, especially anybody in Oklahoma or Texas or Arkansas or Missouri, are probably familiar with the Kayamishi Mountains because it's a very beautiful place. It's not for anybody that's listening from another state, it's not mountains like Rocky Mountains. I mean, it wouldn't even qualify as that, but they are like Appalachian style mountains, the more rolling, older mountains. But they're, yeah. And it's like, it's more eastern woodland, it's like what you would see in Tennessee and all the way up into, the Appalachian chain.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people probably that have not traveled through there, when you think Oklahoma, you just think nothing but flat cornfields,
That too. It's a very diverse state. Seriously, if you're on the, Interstate 35 separates the state right down the middle. You go to the west of I-35, it starts at, that's what we call the cross timbers right in there. That's the oak, a lot of hardwoods and oaks, and it's, then they give away the further west you go, it turns more into plains. Okay. And down in the southwest corner of the state, we've got the Wichita Mountains, which looks like, if you ever watch some of the old westerns, when the cavalry's riding through and they're being attacked by the natives and stuff, it looks just like you'd expect to see a wagon train going through down there. But now you get the southeastern part of the state, you've got the mountains, you've got pine forests, you've got lots and lots of creeks, lakes, and a long, long, rich history of Bigfoot sightings that go all the way back before they even had a new to call them Bigfoot. They called them wild man or boogers or stuff like that. Or just different names. Of course, the name Bigfoot didn't come around till like 1958 when Jerry Crew found those big footprints up in Northern California.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like I said, then what got you focused on this region then, other than it just being a really cool name? I mean, something had to lead you there to make you want to start investigating in that area.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of where I'm from. I mean, the foothills of the Kayamishis is less than an hour drive from my house. And I've been interested in this since I was a little kid. And the story is my mother back in the 60s worked for it. I was born in the late 60s. I worked for a veterinarian named Dr. Lewis Stiles. And he had a practice in the little town close here, but he was from the town of Broken Bow, Oklahoma, which is right down in the southeast corner, right at the foothills of the mountains there. And he was born there, so he became a federal veterinarian and moved back to the Broken Bow area. So my family and I would go down there and spend a lot of time. So I basically grew up with his kids. And he had this book, and I remember this. I was looking at this book before I was old enough to read, and it was by Roger Patterson. Roger Patterson, Patterson-Gimlin film. And it was called, Do Abominable Snowmen of America Really Exist? And back in, before the famous Patterson film, Lewis knew that he was looking for that. And Lewis was wanting to go on an expedition with him. He said, look, I don't know nothing about this, but I'm a veterinarian, I'm a man of science, I'm curious, and I know horses. I could help you with the horses. Nothing ever came of that. But he did get that copy of that book from Roger. So when I was a little kid, I went poring over that book every chance I got. And then one day we were down there, and I was probably about 10 years old at this time. There's an area way back in the sea. Okay, if you're in Broken Bow, just north of Broken Bow is mountains. Just south, you go into these cypress swamps or sloughs, as we call them. Somebody had an encounter with a Bigfoot in one of these swamps down there, or sloughs, whatever you want to call them. And I was like, wow, we got to go look. So under the guise of my dad and Lewis taking me fishing in this same area, I talked them into taking me back in there. And of course, they're fishing, and I'm just looking into the forest, because I know that thing's got to be there, you know. And I was hooked from an early age. Any of the book clubs, we're talking in the mid-70s, you know. Of the book clubs, if there was anything, any books on Bigfoot or the Yeti, the Abominable Snowman, I would get them, you know. So, and then in the mid to late 1990s, I started actively collecting and, more properly looking into this mystery, you know, as I became a young adult. And, well, that's where it all got started. And so I never outgrew it.
So in the mid 90s, then, were you like, how did people know that you were the guy to send their,
well, they,
or did
really,
you go
at, they really
actively go looking?
Yeah. You know, during that time, I would go into areas like, mid to late 90s, I would go into the areas where, there were, reports in, camp or hike and fish do these type of things. Now, when it became a thing would have been about probably 99 or 2000, I started a website called southernbigfoot.com. It just seemed like the thing to call it. And then people started reaching out to me with their sightings and have to have me investigate them. And at that time, from like 1995 to then, the biggest website was the BFRO. And I was briefly a contact for them. Their main contact in Oklahoma, to my knowledge, at that time was Roger Roberts. And I went on a few field investigations with him during that time as well. But I'm pretty fiercely independent, so I mostly did my own thing, but I did work with them on a few interesting cases, which I talk about those in the book as well, Kiamishi Bigfoot.
Well, do you want to share one of those interesting encounters from the early days that really got you into it?
The first one that I investigated that just, I did not have any doubt when I heard this guy's story and the other fellow, I'm like going, okay, this guy's not making it up. Two things happened: mistaken identity of something they ran into, or they had a face-to-face encounter with a Sasquatch. And this encounter took place in the river bottoms below the dam of Grand Lake, which is in the far northeastern corner of the state. And both people involved in this sighting, this encounter, were two off-duty police officers. Well, one was a sheriff's deputy and the other is a police officer. And these people are both featured and we'll talk about the documentary I was on with the Travel Channel in a minute. But anyway, I got an email from him. His name was Dan. And I thought, okay, he's a police officer, he's putting a lot on the line if he's, coming public with this. And he was so shocked and everything. He didn't care who knew, So I met him up there. Now here's another thing, how I knew these guys were telling me the truth. The one officer, the deputy, would not go back down into this area. And the other guy left before dark, leaving me down there. So, I mean, that first night down there, nothing happened, but I'm like, there, that was the sincerity, of that. Now, the Dan Belda, it was his name, and sadly, he's no longer living. He passed away in the mid 2000s. But he and I became friends, and he was actually became my contact for doing investigations up in that part of the state. But anyway, we went back down there a few times. What had happened is him and another guy were four wheeling back there, and they seen one of these things run across this trail, you know, in front of them at a distance, but it was far enough away it didn't have the, you know, the scary effect on them too much. But then this other night, him and another guy, this other fellow was, like I said, an off-duty a sheriff's deputy, were camping down there, and they heard something on the other. It would have been on the east side of camp. You had a mountain that went straight up, and at the bottom of this mountain, I'm calling it, there's like a dip and a berm that something could hide behind, and they were hearing something on the other side of this berm. And this is deep woods. And so they thought, as the story came to me, well, it's an armadillo is what they thought it was an armadillo rooting in the leaves. And they were going to walk around there and shoot the armadillo. And when they walked around the side of this berm, what they come face to face with, what they were hearing was this Sasquatch was scooting up the other side on its stomach, looking at them over the top of it. And it just stood up right in their face. And, I'm not going to repeat on air what Dan said that he did, but he said, basically, I screamed like a expletive and ran. Now, the other guy froze in his tracks, and Dan grabbed him by the collar and jerked him out of there, and they left all of their camping equipment and everything down there. They beat a hasty retreat. And I was down there not terribly long after that initial sighting. So that one was very interesting because I knew just the fear that they had of that area, that they were, you know, being truthful about it. Several weeks, and this area is about a good 4-hour drive from where I live down here in the southeastern part of the state. But one night we were up there, it was me, Dan, now she's my ex-wife, but wasn't at the time, and something was prowling around the edge of camp, and on the river side of camp, which, and this is the same place he had had his encounter earlier that year. By this time, there's a lot of river cane, big sycamore trees are just really thick, and briars and underbrush, and we could hear something in that underbrush. And for a brief instant, I shined my flashlight over there and got some eye shine back, and that was it. But we didn't hear it run off anywhere, so I was thinking, well, it's still in that brush. So I went around to try to approach it from the side, because at this time I was thinking, well, it's most probably a deer, because I just seen a brief flash of eye shine. And as I come around there, between me and where I saw the eye shine, there was a big tree there that was obscuring my line of sight there. And both Dan and my then wife yelled and said it stood up, and they seen this Bigfoot basically that was crouched in the brush stand up, and they seen it from like the waist up, and then it took off running, and it took off running in my direction. And as it went through the thicker brush just to the west side of me, I caught a brief glimpse of just a flash of brown, and that's all I seen of it, and it was gone. You know, so.
Well, I wanted to ask you, since you became friends with Dan, and right. Him and the other guy were police and sheriff, off duty. So, right. In that case, what do they report that to anybody, or are they just looking for somebody?
People don't. No, they did. I mean, they talked about it. I mean, what are you going to report? I mean, when you get down to it.
Well, that's what I wonder, them being in the profession, okay? And
because this is wilderness area. I mean, it's not like there's any laws broken, I mean, you know, or anything like that. There was nobody attacked. There was no dangerous thing. They just saw it, you know, scared them because it was safe, face-to-face. But I mean, there was no injuries. There were no loss to property, damaged property. I mean, there was, I mean, what? Yeah, you really don't. Something like that. I mean, they did share it with some of their friends. Matter of fact, one of the times that I went down there, Dan brought a couple of his other police buddies with him. And I don't know their names. I only saw them that one time. But now the one guy, now if you watch Bigfootville, the name of the documentary that I was on and helped the Travel Channel in making was called Bigfootville. And when you get to the part where Dan and the deputy's on there, you can tell the deputy is very scared. And, you know, that was the first time he had been back down into that area since they had had that initial encounter. And that had been, by that time, about a year had passed. And he was still pretty, you know, nervous about being down there. Even though, when you watch a documentary, don't ever think somebody's out in the woods by themselves. You got all kinds of people around you.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Like, for instance, with us, we had the film crew, and we all probably ought to segue into that part of it more properly, or it's going to be all fragmented. But anyway, we can talk about the documentary thing in a minute. But anyway, that was one of the more interesting early cases that I was involved in. The other one, which actually had one of these things on surveillance video, was beside a casino here in Oklahoma. And it's just called simply the casino footage. And I'm one of very few people outside of that particular tribe that got to see that footage. And it was basically, they had footage, and what me and the guy from the BFRO, named Roger Roberts, he was the other guy that was allowed into that what do you call it, security room to see that back then. And he had a friend of his he brought from Southeast Oklahoma with him that I don't know his name, and I really wouldn't have any reason to, because that was the only time I was really around the guy. But we were allowed to see it, and we only saw a few seconds what they had, but it showed one of these creatures step up to this grease trap behind that casino and lean over and place its hands on the top. And there was a small light, like street light, beside this grease trap, and it was standing right under it. And we were able to measure up this light pole where it was, and we were able to determine its height at just over 9 feet tall, which kind of rules out a guy in a monkey suit.
Boy. And if you were going to do a hoax in a monkey suit, why would you go to a grease trap? You know, there'd be a lot of other cool, you know.
Well, and plus it left like long fingerprints in the grease on the top of it. You know, these fingers were massively wide, you know. But the thing is, this thing wasn't and of course, keep in mind, it was that, you know how surveillance video at night look, it's kind of grayish, grainy looking and all. But the way this thing moved and the way it was built, it was not like the thing on the Patterson film. It did walk kind of like that, in that gliding type fashion, but it, instead of that stocky build, it was very tall and like lanky, muscular, like a basketball player or something like that, you know, but of course covered in hair.
Was that the only time that that place had?
No, not at all. They had been, during that period of time, they were getting reports from all over that area, which I just almost didn't want to go up there. That's a long ways from my house too. I'm in Southeast Oklahoma. That's getting up on the other side of the city, which you're just getting into Western Oklahoma there and into Prairie. You know, I'm like, what would a Bigfoot be doing out there? But it does run. This place is very close to the North Canadian River, and where they have had sightings of Bigfoot along that river since the, you know, early 70s, late 60s. They called it the Chicken Man, not because it looked or acted like a chicken, but there were some chicken farmer had found it trying to get into his chicken pen and stealing chickens. So, you know, I mean, everybody likes chicken, right? Even the big. And also there was a large patch of forest there, which is not tall forest like southeast Oklahoma, but still a lot of like scrub oak and stuff like that, where there were some natural springs in. I don't think that these things stayed there because it was too concentrated an area. I think they were probably migrating along the river and would come up there, probably attracted by the food that they throw away or something back there. But there was even reports of a bus that was parked out there with some people on it at night, and one of these things walking up and looking in a window at them. And there were just a lot of stuff going on there at the time. Of course, people started coming up wanting to know more about wanting to look for Bigfoot instead of gamble at the casino. So they shut that down pretty quick and just said, okay, no more, you know. Plus people trespassing on the tribal property and just making a nuisance of themselves. They just said, you know, no more of that.
Well, was that anything that the Native American tribe had? Did they have any kind of theories as to what it was? Was it something that their tribe had talked about at all before they started running casinos, you know?
To my knowledge, every Native American tribe has some legend regarding these creatures. They call them different things, you know, different languages. Mm-hmm. And it also depends on the character of what you're describing. Like, take my book, The Champey, which is based on a monster in Choctaw legend. The Champey is a cannibalistic, big, black, foul-smelling, ogre-like monster. Okay, that sounds like you're talking about a Bigfoot. Now, in that same language, if you're just talking about, and I'm getting this direct from the source, a good friend of mine who is Chickasaw, Choctaw, and Seminole, can speak those languages. I said, what? His name was Tim Harjo, and he was on the Bigfootville documentary as well. I said, if you want to call something a Bigfoot, what would be the name of it? Just your benign, not mean Sasquatch. He said, Hotok Cheeto, which just means big man. He said, that's what we would call it, Hotok Cheeto. Now, Chickasaw, which are cousins to the Choctaw, they did the tribe. Choctaw is the older. The Chickasaw split off the Choctaw back long, long time ago. I don't know how long, hundreds of years probably. And the same thing in the Chickasaw, Tim told me, would call Hotok Ishtu, which means big man. Same thing, you know. So Hotok is man. So you have the Pacific Northwest, you know, famously you've got the Sasquatch, which is an anglicized version of what the word actually is. The mean one up in the Pacific Northwest, the Sonequaw, that would steal and eat children, which sounds like their version of what the Champey would be back down here. And the Choctaw native land is in an area which is now Mississippi. So that would have been a, you know, down there in the swamps and stuff. So yeah, every tribe, you got the stone giants up in the Northeast. I mean, every tribe has some legend regarding these creatures.
Well, you mentioned the Champey. That's the other book that you wrote, right?
Is the first book I wrote, is the Champey, and that is also available on Amazon in paperback or ebook, and it's spelled Shampe. Champey, however you pronounce it. I've got two Choctaw friends. One of them called it Champey, the other called it Champey. So I guess you got some leeway there. But and people say, well, why? Because where I live is smack in the middle of the, where my business is in Chickasaw Nation. Of course, they're like, well, why didn't you write it about the Chickasaw version of the bad one called the Lufa? And I'm like, well, because the mountains of southeast Oklahoma is Choctaw territory. So I went with the Choctaw legend on that. Now, the story itself is fiction. but it is, the research is very sound that I put into this creature, and it is by all intents and purposes describing a Sasquatch. And the book does also contain the more shy forest Bigfoots that just want to be left alone. There's also some accounts in the Champaign that are based on actual accounts as well. But it is for the biggest part a fictional story. However, Kiamishi Bigfoot is all actual accounts and documenting my research into the subject and history in it.
Well, so back to that one. So as we come, those first couple cases you talked about, and I do like the fact that Dan, it's weird, isn't it, that Dan and the other guy experienced the same thing, but Dan, it didn't affect Dan seemingly the same way. He was still willing to go back out there.
That's the thing. Any traumatic event, nobody can say. And I was a police officer for a while too. So, you take reports from people, and I say that just to say that I have interviewed people that have been involved in a traumatic experience, and nobody knows how they will react to something like this. You can plan for it. You can say, man, if that was me, I'd have done this. Well, no, you don't know until it happens. And Dan, like I said, the first time he led me back in there, he left before dark. The other fellow, Jeff, first time he was back in there was when we shot the Travel Channel documentary, and there was a good number of people there. So it's, it's just, you're out in the woods, and all of a sudden, within 10, 15 foot of you, something stands up that's not supposed to exist. And it towers above you at like 7 to 8 feet tall, covered in reddish brown hair.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And it just stands there and looks at you. Nobody can tell you exactly how they will react to that.
Yeah, you're absolutely, absolutely right.
His curiosity led him back, and he and I became, pretty good friends during that. And I went up there several times during that time. But after that, when the thing stood up in front of him when I was down there and then ran by me in the woods the next few times down there, no activity whatsoever on that. Now when we were shooting that documentary for Travel Channel, there were some weird noises and stuff in the woods, like that, and some of the crew thought they saw something up on the ridge, but that's open for interpretation. Because like I say, if you're doing a documentary, you'll have cameramen, you'll have sound men, you'll have producers, other people. There's a lot of people around.
But you know what? I think the one thing about these creatures, though, that you find out is you can't predict what's going to make them show up and what's going to scare them away or anything. I think they just kind of...
Well. Here's the thing that I've found that's almost without exception is the people that have a sighting, it's not when they're out looking for them so much as they're going about their business of camping or fishing or whatever and just happen to catch sight of them. Like Dan and Jeff's case, this thing was, obvious curiosity. It was scooting itself up the other side of this berm to watch them, cook their meal or whatever they were doing. And some people say they've had them act aggressive and stuff. And I say this, I have not. I've had a very large rock, and there was a witness here to this besides me too, bounced off a tree just outside of our camp. And when I say a large rock, I mean probably 30-pound rock thrown with force against a large tree right outside of our camp. And somebody said, well, that's aggression. I said, no, aggression would be that thing throwing that rock on top of us instead of against a tree. You know, my impression was it was letting us know that it was there and it would rather us go somewhere else, which we didn't, but we didn't go back to sleep that night either. And that segue into that was, as you and I were talking before the show, there's an area that I go to down in the Kiamishi Mountains that I started going to, this exact little canyon, if you will, back in 2003. Actually, somebody that lives not far from me would take horses down in the mountains and ride horseback on trails. And one of these creatures walked out into the trail ahead of him about 50 yards, noticed him, and then went back into the woods. And so I went down there looking into that. And me and a good friend of mine, his name is Brian Baker, and he's in the book here, in this story I'm telling you is in there too. We had went fishing in this area. We was going to catch our dinner, which I like to do. Nothing tastes better than fish cooked right on in a skillet on a campfire. And while we were hiking along this creek, this was in late March of 2003. Something was pacing us in the woods. And this is very, very thick woods down there in southeast Oklahoma. And it would walk as we walked, and it would whistle. And it was kind of a strange whistle. It's not like a bird, not quite like you'd think of a person, but it felt, set to me, more like something was doing a low whistle that kind of originated more from the chest. If that's just the best way I can describe it. We were like, well, we wonder if that's a Bigfoot, you know, but we never see anything. But later that night, like after midnight, we had turned in, and I generally do not sleep in a tent. I will put a tarp between trees to keep the dew or rain or something like that off of us. But I don't like to be confined in a tent if I can help it. Now, if it's really bitter cold, I will. But we were awakened, it was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning like that, of this loud thud. And when investigating it, we found that big rock where it had hit that tree just right outside of our camp and was laying on the ground under the tree. So we did not sleep the rest of that night. And the next day we found tracks in the leaves, and then we could see a heel print protruding from a mud puddle in the trail there. And I was actually thought, there's a footprint in that. And so what I did, I built a little dam with sticks and stuff around this area and gently laid paper towels in that till we drained all the water out of it and made a cast of the footprint. It's not perfect, but it looks pretty good. So, and that was where... And where we found the tracks was where that thing would have thrown that rock from. Aggression would have been if it had thrown the rock at us, which it definitely could have done, but it did not. I think a lot of people, when they call aggression, and I'm just generalizing, because I'm not saying people that experience aggression by these creatures don't, but the ones that I have documented myself were usually preceded by somebody shooting at one of them. Now, if you shoot at something and it acts mean toward you, that's more defensive than aggression in my book. You know, for the largest part of encounters that I call credible encounters anyway, are people accidentally seeing one of these things. Matter of fact, the only time I have actually laid eyes on one, it was very brief and it was not very big, and it was the summer before last. Wait, what day is it? Yeah, it had been last summer. We're not in the fall yet. And it was in a different area. It was in southeast Oklahoma as well. And I was doing a solo camp and got there kind of late. It was still a little bit of daylight left, but I was getting stuff out of my truck. Across the creek from me in the brush, something caught the corner of my eye. And when I looked back, this figure was standing there. I estimate its height, 4.5-5 foot tall, not big. My first thought when I focused on it was, that is a really big wild pig staring at me straight on. But then it turned to the side and shot off through the woods, and it was a bipedal hair-covered creature, and it was not a quadruped at all. And it shot off through the woods, and it didn't hardly make a noise as it left the area. But it was covered in a grayish black hair, and it was about I'd say yards, probably 25 yards, 30 yards at the most, across the creek. And its face, all I can tell you about is the face had dark skin on it, could not make out any features. And, you know, looking back, as soon as I focused on it, it took off into the woods, but it wasn't big, you know.
So do you think that was a juvenile then that you saw?
Or just something else? Well, it was a Sasquatch. I don't have any doubt. It was a Sasquatch. It's all it could be. Now, after it disappeared into the woods there, I did hear some like guttural chattering noises on either side of where it disappeared to, higher up the ridge on each side. And one was across the creek from me, not close, but the other was just downstream from me a little bit. And of course, my thoughts was maybe, those were adults griping at the young one for being careless or something. I don't know. That's just a thought that came to mind. But, you know, after that, I stayed there the rest of the evening, and I did not have any other weirdness, I guess you'd say. The birds and night sounds were just normal, you know. But and it did, you know, when I was saying nobody knows how they'll act when they actually seen one. Me, it was like, you know, my gosh, I finally saw one, you know. Now, if I'd had a face-to-face encounter, turned around, and there's one 7 to 9 feet tall right in my face, I probably would not have stayed there, you know. But, you don't know how you'll react, you know.
Even though you're pretty sure there was probably a 7 to 9 foot one just beyond your view, just without seeing it was enough comfort that you didn't see it.
I've tried to put a handle on the emotion I was feeling at that time, and it was more bewilderment, yeah. You know, because I've looked at this for so long, I've taken credible reports from somebody. I had a flash of a sighting there, but all I saw was a flash of brown. So I couldn't say the one by Grand Lake was a Sasquatch, except for what Dan said he saw it from the waist up. But I did not get a clear picture of that one, just a flash of brown in my flashlight beam deeper as it ran deeper into the brush. But yeah, this was, I remember telling myself, you know, my gosh, I actually saw one, you know, and that it was just that bewilderment. A lot of times, the scariest part of being out in the woods like that on a solo camp is when you get back home and are thinking about the possibilities that could happen when you're out by yourself. My friend Cornell from that has the No Such Thing podcast lives up in Massachusetts. And he come down and he was like going, how long are we going to drive? Because we drove, he got here that first night late. We got to a camp where we was going to camp down there in the mountains like at 11:30 at night. And we drove through the dark forever. And he was thinking it'd be scary. And then once we're down there and have the campfire set up, he's like, you know, really the thought of being out here at night is scarier than actually being out here. And that's a good point.
Well, I mean, as somebody who does not go out there and doesn't like the camp unless it's in something that's got wheels, you know, I my hat's off to, to you guys going out there in tents or sleeping bags and all by yourselves, especially. I mean,
it's you know, seriously, it is. If you're out there, it's not as scary, you know. I mean, it depends on what's going on around you, too. But the one thing, especially solo camping, you have to be so much more, especially going into really remote areas where I do. Like the place that I'm talking about where I got a glimpse of that little Sasquatch across the creek. You have to drive for a full 30 minutes out of there before you get the first little bit of cell phone signal. So unless you've got a satellite phone, you're on your own. So what do you have to look out for? One, I'm not worried about Bigfoot. I've said this before. If Bigfoot is out to get us, he's not very good at it. Okay, now let that soak in a lot. Most people, they say a Bigfoot, as soon as they realize that they've been seen, they go the other direction. That is the vast majority of reports that I've got, and if you read about them, you know, there's the old reports like Mount St. Helens, Ape Canyon, where they attacked the cabin. Yeah, but what happened before that? They shot one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's going to make anybody mad. The report that Theodore Roosevelt relayed in his book Wilderness Hunter about the trapper Bauman, his partner getting killed by, maybe it was a Bigfoot. It doesn't say it was, but maybe it was. But when it approached their lean-to, they shot at the big form that was standing there. So, you know, to me, if you've shot at it, you fired the proverbial first shot. You know, would things have been different had they not done that? I don't know. But in my experience, I've not experienced. The closest thing to aggression I've experienced is the big rock that was thrown against the tree. And like I said, it could just as easily have thrown it on one of us as the tree.
Yeah, I hear the reports about the large rocks being thrown, and you know, you hope that Bigfoot knows what he's doing, you know, that the creatures have good enough aim and they're just not missing on accident.
Well,
I missed again. I'll get one, sir. You know, like
I'll tell you one here last, this would have been the March before last, my friend from Massachusetts, Cornell, came down, and him, me and my son went down to this area, and we spent a couple of nights down there in the mountains. The first night we was there, we heard some couple of wood knocks, some distant type of vocalizations and such. The second night we traveled farther back in, and this is on my, part of this is on my YouTube channel as well. If you go back to the Kaimishi expedition from March of 2021. But that second night we were there, of course it was bitter cold. So me and my son were in a tent. Cornell had his own tent set up right at the base of this boulder field, which was the edge of this mountain, deep woods. Earlier that night, we heard a wood knock up the mountain beside us. A little bit later, it was answered. We were right on the edge of that went down into these creek bottoms. There was wood knock answered down in those creek bottoms. And a little later, something was clacking rocks together further down in the creek. So late that night, we're all asleep. And I'm awakened after midnight. Cornell is just yelling. He said, "Something's beside my tent. Something's beside my tent." And so me and Elijah, my son, we come out of our tent, and Cornell's just, you know, terrified. And my first thought was a bear, because he says, no, it was walking like a human. Like, and somebody, to get where we were, you would have to drive a good ways and then hike a ways. And we would have, it was just unlikely, very unlikely that we would not have been alerted to it. Plus, whatever had come up beside his tent just, you know, was gone as soon as we got out. And we'd have heard something, I would think, getting away if it was a person. My first thought was a bear, because we do, there's a good population of black bear in that part of the state. But here's the thing. We had food left out in our camp, and my son had cooked steak in a skillet over the fire, and the grease was still in the skillet, food left out, which you're not supposed to do. I know that, but it didn't touch that. All it did was come down and brush up against Cornell's tent. And we looked around, whatever it was, it went back. You know, of course, we had the feeling that whatever it was probably concealed in the woods observing us. But so anyway, we decided we're going back to bed. Cornell said, I'm not sleeping in the tent. He said, I'll sleep in your pickup in the back seat. And I said, well, yeah, but it's full of stuff. He goes, I don't care. I'll sleep in the front seat. I said, okay. So he sits up there. Me and Elijah, we go back in the tent, go sleep. Next morning, I get up, look at my pickup, and Cornell is sitting up in the front seat with a sleeping bag over his head. And I'm like, well, it was really cold. And went over, knocked on there, and he came out. I said, was you cold? He said, no. He said, when y'all got back in your tent, I was looking around at all the windows in this truck thinking, my God, what if it comes up and looks in at me? But an interesting thing, Cornell had set a recording device, audio recording device, out in the woods about, I'd say, 50, 60 yards from camp, just out in the woods. And when he got back to Massachusetts and started going through the files on that, he captured a really loud whoop. And I'm like, we didn't hear that. It had to have been after we had, called it a night. But it was a very loud, clear whoop, like you hear people talk about. And I've heard before, too. But he got it very clear. And if you go on his YouTube channel called the No Such Thing Podcast on YouTube, you can go back to about a year ago and find the audio that he recorded from that trip. So
that's good. I mean, that's, you wonder how close the creature was to the audio device. You know, maybe it was standing right there beside it, or a little bit far.
No, it would have been, I think it had been a lot louder. It wasn't right on it. No, I mean, but this audio device, this recorder, it would pick stuff up from a long ways away. Like the first night, the first night we was there, there was some like this chattering noises, but it was so far away in the woods, we could barely hear it with, the naked ear. And I'm like, what is that? But when he got that home, he was able to blow that up, and it was a couple of raccoons having a disagreement. But through the trees at a distance, where you could barely hear it with just your ear, it was hard to identify. But once he got it back and, that recorder really picked it up clear. And it's like, oh no, that's a couple of raccoons, Now the whoop, that's still unexplained.
Yeah. I don't know a lot of things that whoop, just in the woods.
Well, I mean, people looking for Bigfoot. Whoop a lot. Different owls, barn owls, they can make some wicked scary sounds,
Now, before we end this conversation here, I want to touch on a story we talked about before. Was the investigation that you did on some kids that were being watched?
Oh, okay. Well, all right. That was in 2020, I guess. I first received an email from a gentleman down near the town of Antlers, which is in southeast Oklahoma. And since this gentleman and his family, he moved them to back to Arkansas, but they had some property in the country, and his kids, let me get back to the first of this on the email. they had bought their kid, their little boy, a Christmas present of one of those battery operated cars you can drive yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Like little kids can get in and drive it, you know, not fast. And the little boy made the comment, well, he can't catch me now. And Mark's like, what are you talking about? He goes, well, he called it a big black man is what he called it. He that lives in the woods. He said he follows me from the school bus every day. And Mark, you know, Mark, his dad's like, you know what, you know, thinks it's kid's imagination. Right. And you look at it, there's the driveway that led to their house is probably a good 100 yards long. The school bus let the kids off there. They had walked to the house and there's a tree line of, you know, 30, 40 yards to the other side. And they said that this man, this big man, would walk in the woods and just kind of follow them in the edge of the tree line. They just thought it was their imagination at first. But one night, they're in the living room, him and his wife, and the little boy comes running in there and said, hey, there's a bear looking in my window. And he said, it has a white face, you know, and it's like, it turns out, he says, no, and it walks upright. It walked like, you know, walked away just like a person. So Mark, he set up a bunch of game cameras and other security cameras around the house. Because what he did for a living, he set up security systems and stuff like that. So he was really good with the electronics. And he got some shots, distant shots, of this tall black figure standing inside the tree line. It's a humanoid looking figure. And if you go on his website, you can see these. They're blurry. You could call them a blob of squatch if you will, but they're distant. But it is a dark humanoid figure standing there. And then he just had all this stuff going on. So he asked me if I'd come out there and look in on it. And I went down there, and then when I went and investigated the woods behind his house. There's a whole account of this in the book, Kaimishi Bigfoot. And I show some pictures of a couple of the footprints I found. There's a trail behind the house where I found footprints of three different sizes of Sasquatch. I think the longest print was around 15 inches, and the smallest one probably 11 inches long, but that wide, flat, you know, Sasquatch look. There's a trail through the woods you'd think was just a regular game trail, but you can see where these things were coming up right to the edge of the tree line close to their house. And you had his house was there close to it, and then snuggled up right against the trees was his parents' house. And they're a stone's throw from each other. And there was one branch about, 7 foot, 6.5, 7 foot off the ground on this one tree, green, where something had grabbed this branch and just twisted it, which I found quite interesting. And there's pictures of that stuff when I recount that story. But anyway, long story short, not to give away the whole account in the book, is they eventually, due to concern that these things may have, you know, less than peaceful intentions, their kids may be in danger, so they moved back to Arkansas where they lived previously.
Wow. So that's in the book, the Kaimishi Bigfoot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I'm about to start writing on another. Like I say, as long as I've looked into this stuff, I've got a lot of things I could talk about. And then, like I say, there's one chapter in there that's just just other people's accounts that have sent in to me that, you know, I got permission for them to put in there. There's one chapter in the book that's just called What Are They? Which there's so many different things on the internet now. Back in the 90s, it was either a subhuman or a Gigantopithecus that made its way from China all the way over to here and evolved to whatever. And now you've got people even exploring a paranormal aspect to the big, which I, with my own, and I'm very careful here. I don't want to ridicule anybody because honest investigation. You take the person's report and you look into it. Now, my conclusions are not conclusions bad because I'm still learning. In my own personal investigations, have been of a creature that is flesh and blood. Now, I have taken accounts from people where it seems to be a flesh and blood creature, but there's strange things happening around it, like even Mark that I was just talking about, where these creatures were observing his kids, like when they walk from there. He had witnessed orbs of light out in the woods in conjunction with sightings with these things. And I've heard that in other reports. I've never seen anything like that myself. What's the connection? I don't know. Is it coincidence? Maybe so. You know, I don't know.
Did he happen to capture any of the orbs on his surveillance video that he put up?
Not that I remember. One of the things it was, and this was, I got to see this firsthand, behind the house where this thing was coming up to where his boy's window was. It had left a greasy handprint on the back of that house. It was a sheet metal outside on the house, and it left a greasy like handprint on that.
How close was this to the casino then? Was that the same one that was in the grease trap?
No, not like that. More like, I say grease, I'm talking like maybe the oil from the fingerprints or something.
I got you.
No, this is a good, probably.
I thought that would be too good of a tie-in. Right?
160 miles from where that took place. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
He experienced something, and he's got so many, like, pictures from around his house. You know, we found a game camera out in the woods that he had forgot he even had. And it turned out it had a picture of what looked like it coming through the brush, a humanoid black figure. And it looks like it has like a white patch on the top of its head there, which would kind of be like, you know, the little boy said, there's a bear with a white face looking in my window.
Oh, yeah.
So. That was pretty weird. And I've had people report, I mean, he had like electrical anomalies and some other weird stuff going around his house. There were some things that you could probably classify as high strangeness going around there too. Now, did that have anything to do with the Bigfoots that were there? Or was that coincidence? I don't know that.
Well, and it's funny you were, telling the story that the kid felt that there was a black figure or whatever, black man in the woods following him to the bus. I just interviewed somebody a couple weeks ago. Her name was Rhonda, who in the 70s, and I think it was Iowa, would take her kids down to the school bus, and there was a Bigfoot that she said she knew was in the field. You know, four or five rows into the field that would walk through the corn and back up to the house. Yeah, she would go to the school bus and come back up. It's weird that you just described that same kind of activity. You know, they're very curious, and they're obviously curious about kids.
And two, there was a house not far from theirs, deeper into the woods. And of course, I said, have you talked to that neighbor? Have they experienced anything? And he said, no. He said they had not, but it was an older gentleman who was kind of disabled and didn't really get out much, and there were never any kids there. And I kind of, where he lived was kind of south of the Kiamishi Mountains, not far, just a few miles. You can see the foothills of the Kiamishi from his yard, and you go just a little bit south and you're into the northeast part of Texas, where, you know, you go into what they call the Big Thicket area, where they have a long history of Bigfoot sightings there. And I was telling him, I said, you know, you're probably at a crossroads. right here. I think they passed through and they saw your kids out playing and were curious. Now, do I think you should trust anything like that? Absolutely not. You know, you got children, those kids come first, you know. So I don't blame him at all for wanting to get them, you know, out of there, because you don't know. They may not be a Harry and the Hendersons type, you know.
No kidding.
But for the biggest part, I think the evidence is very overwhelming that for the biggest part, they are want to avoid us as much as possible. But sometimes their curiosity gets the best of them and they get, you know, seen.
Well, David, I want to give our listeners again the name of your YouTube channel, saying go check that out, and then where they can find your two books.
Okay. Well, my YouTube channel is called Bigfoot and More. And if any, you know, I've got contact on there. If anybody wants to contact me with a sighting or something that's here in Oklahoma or close, or just want to share something, just, you know, the address there is bigfootandmore@yahoo.com. I do my best to answer any emails that's sent, but it's Bigfoot and More. And my books are Kayamishi Bigfoot, Investigating the Oklahoma Sasquatch. And that is a documentary basically documenting my investigations into this mystery. And it's available on Amazon in both ebook and paperback. And the other one is called The Champey, Terror Has a Name, and it's a fictional Bigfoot story based on a monster in a native Choctaw legend. And it is also available on Amazon in ebook or paperback.
Well, David, we'll throw some links up there for all the listeners so they can go subscribe to your YouTube channel and go check out those books. So I just think couple stories that you shared, especially about the Kayamishi Bigfoot book. I bet that's a page turner. You know, there's some good stuff.
Yeah, and it's just, you can read it pretty quick. It's a couple hundred pages. It's not, you know, massive. But I'm about to start on the next one. So, you know, knock on wood, got to get in the writing mood again. And I've already started an outline on it.
Well, look, you can't write the book unless you got the outline. I can tell you that much.
Right.
I can tell you that much. Well, David, thank you so much for hanging out with me for a little bit tonight. And I'm glad we got to have you on. You had some great.
I've enjoyed this. Nice visit.
Yeah, some great experiences.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I think that like people don't really think of Oklahoma as a hot spot, but obviously some of the people we've talked to, it's got just as much going on when it comes to Bigfoot as any place else.
Yeah, and it has been. It always has been down in, especially the Ouachita Mountains and such, but also in the Northeast as well. I mean, yeah, you know, thing is, you never know where one of these things is going to show up when you get down to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, David, well, thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch.
All right, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
God only knows what's hiding in our shadows.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.